Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sun.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and we have found a new great member of the Bubba team, someone who's going to talk to us, a research analyst, a guy you've seen on CNBC, Market Watch, and many of the other major news outlets around the world, John Kosar from Asbury Research. How you doing, John?
I'm fine, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing great. So John, we've got a lot of views on both sides of the market, but before we get into your opinions, tell us a little bit about Asbury Research and what you guys do there.
Sure. We launched Asbury in 2005, and we supply independent research to various professionals. We work with everybody from billion-dollar hedge funds, you know, down to FAs, which may be 2 to 4 financial advisors in an office. And so we have different levels of service. As the market's changed over the years, we've kind of spread our wings a little bit to try to have support and products for more than just the PMs and hedge funds that we started with in 05. So this is our 11th year.
Wow. So you've been hanging around and doing this business. Now, how'd you get involved in the research end of the business?
Well, I started down on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange in the very early 80s, back when that was a venue for somebody to be able to start in the business without really knowing anything, just having an interest in financial markets. So I started there and started at the bottom just like everybody did, and spent I think about 17 years I spent. I think I was down there until the 1997-ish area. During that time, I worked myself up to the point where I was filling orders for a while, and I was basically working in the pit filling orders, and then eventually I moved to the outside of the pit in the area they used to call, the booths, I guess is what they used to call those, flashing in orders, and what my job was at that time. And I was really starting to look at charts then, as I would get an order to buy 500 S&Ps over a 48-hour period, and I would have to try to pick the levels. So that was kind of my initial interest, and I think the reason I got kind of hooked on it is I was on the floor for a very short time, and I noticed that the guys that were carrying the point and figure charts around were the guys with the smiles on their faces and the guys that seemed to be making the most money. And it was very interesting to me to be able to study previous price action and try to forecast what might happen tomorrow. So that's really how I started.
So when you look at charts, and this is something that we cover a lot here on the Bubba Show, is we're purely technical because, you know, fundamentals are great, and having a good, strong fundamental company is great, but the markets move and the price changes based on the footprint that the markets leave. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. I think what I've always felt is that what you see in price and what you see in volume in futures, what you see in open interest, or what you see in the asset flows of an ETF, you know, whether it's the Qs or whether it's TLT, is you're getting all of the collective wisdom of everybody who has some skin in the game as to what they think the economy is doing, or what they think that jobs number was, or whatever the news of the day might be. If it's geopolitical, really doesn't matter. So to me, it's kind of, you know, the market's viewpoint on what, you know, the entire climate is for the landscape there, and you know, for people who have skin in the game. And you know, to me, I think that's the, you know, the powerful thing about this, because it's not the number, it's what the market thinks of the number, or the, you know, the news event that actually makes prices go up and down. So I agree, you know, for that, you know, for that very reason.
So as an analyst, and of course, you know, we as technical traders try not to formulate opinions of markets. We try to let the footprint do all the speaking. But what kind of footprints are you seeing in the markets today, just in a general broad stroke?
I'm seeing a lot of indecision. I'm seeing a lot of contradiction, more than I can really remember seeing in a while. If you look at, you know, the NASDAQ markets here, you know, the comp and the NDX, you know, the 100, you know, we're very close to highs from earlier this year. And if you look at the comp, 5133 was the top of the tech bubble high that we made back in March of 2000. And we've bumped up against that six times this year. Haven't really been able to hold it, but have gotten up above it several times. But then if you look at what's going on overseas, I like to use, we really are pretty global in our scope. So I'm looking at a lot of markets, I'm looking at a lot of indexes, and trying to see what's going on in the rest of the world. And what I'm seeing is that the Nikkei 225 out of Japan, the Hang Seng out of China, the DAX, the FTSE out of Europe, they are all trading underneath their 200-day moving averages, and what's more, they've broken through those levels, those averages, third quarter, end of the second quarter, beginning of the third quarter. They rallied back up to try to get back up above them, failed, and, you know, they're rolling over lower. You're also seeing that in the transports here. You're seeing that in the Russell 2000. So depending on which index you look at, you can get a totally different viewpoint of what's going on in the market. ETF asset flows have been very flat. So here's my feeling. I think we are in a position where the market needs to get some legs. When I say the market, I mean our market. It's got to get some legs, basically from where it's at now, between now and the next month or so, if we're going to make some new highs going into the first quarter, maybe second quarter of next year. If we can't from here, if we cannot, you know, get up above 5133 in the NAS composite, we have a, you know, the market's vulnerable to a deeper decline here that I think can take us into February, which is when we have a seasonal bottom in the S&P.
So, John, if somebody were interested in using the Asbury Research, how would they get a hold of you?
The best way is probably to go to the internet. And it's asburyresearch.com. There's a contact page there that, you know, you could fill out, and we'll reach out to you. Or you can call us at 888-960-0005, and we'll send you a couple of sample reports and figure out what you're doing and which level of service might be the best for you.
Right, because, I mean, I know I see a lot of your research, and I think it's really good stuff, and I think everybody should check it out. It's a great website, and you do a lot of good stuff, and you've got the right experience, which is great. So, John, when we come back from the break, here's what I want to just think about something when we go to break, okay? I know, again, we're technical analysis, but I want you to give me an overview of what happened in 2015 and what you expect coming from what you're seeing now going into 2016, and we'll start with the S&P 500, which would be the biggest index, not always the most important, but right now they're still the biggest index, or one of them. So we're going to stop by here for a break. We're visiting with John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com, a great analysis. You've seen him on CNBC, you've heard him on MarketWatch, you've seen him all over the place, been around for quite a while, and certainly in business for 11 years here at Asbury Research. So we're going to stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org as well as bobbubbatrading.com. We'll be back right after the break with more from John Kosar. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com. Going to be a new contributor with the Bubba Show, and great analyst, understands it. You can catch him on CNBC, and really he does just, he's one of the guys, he's one of the go-to guys in the research analyst business. So, John, we went to break. I said, give us an idea of a little recap of the year we just had, or the year we're just ending, and give us an idea of what you're looking forward to in the future.
You know, if I had to put one word for this past year, it would be fearful. You know, the market really hasn't fallen out of bed. And I think to a large degree, you know, with, you know, QE going back years and years and years, the market gets trained. Investors get trained that when the market breaks 5% or 6% or it goes to the 50-day moving average, you know, you come in and buy it. It's almost like a Pavlov's dog. You know, you ring the bell and everybody comes in at that level. I think underneath the market, that's what we've seen. So we really haven't had a sizable break, and those we've had have been really violent, like the one we had at the end of August, and then things kind of got better, and people tried to buy the break again. On the top side, I talked about the comp, you know, the NASDAQ comp, which is at the large index, 5133. Six attempts to get through that. I've never seen that before. Every time we get up above there, you know, we fail. And, you know, what the constant is I'm seeing spates of fear throughout the year. The biggest one and the one that I've been talking about since June, but now everyone is picking up on it here this last month or so, is widening corporate bond spreads. I mean, that's the name of the game this year. And when those spreads widen, it basically means the bond market is nervous. The bond market sees, you know, credit conditions are starting to tighten. The stock market doesn't like that. You know, we've gone back a lot of years here, and we've learned that although the stock market can hold its own, it can kind of stay at a level or maybe even eke out a new high, you don't get a sustained advance in the stock market when corporate bond spreads are widening. We look at the BAAs and probably more closely the high yield spread, because it's a riskier bond. The spread is a little more volatile. It's a lot easier to read. You're getting bigger swings in the spread. So this year, what we've been telling clients is clients are getting chopped up right and left, you know, trying to buy the, you know, trying to buy the market, and then the rally fails. And then, you know, they chase the rally up and it fails. What we've been telling clients that are more intermediate term is to wait for these corporate bond spreads to start to come in. Keep an eye on the VIX. You know, watch the VIX to come back down into that safe zone, which I would say 15 to 13 area. That's a safe zone for the VIX. When you see those things happen, it indicates, you know, the market has kind of taken a sigh of relief, and it's in a situation where, you know, you can get some buying now, and people can support that. You know, the market can support that until we get up above 5133 and stay there. And one way that I can tell if it's going to be able to stay there is we watch ETF asset flows really closely. I've been watching them now for several years. You know, the data is now a little more readily available than it was 5 or 6 years ago. And what I want to see is a move above 5133 in the comp with expanding ETF asset flows in the Qs, the PowerShares QQQs. When you see that, it's indicating that not only are we breaking this major resistance level, but you're getting some new buying coming in and not selling the rally into those fresh highs. When that happens, with corporate bond spreads starting to get smaller, starting, you know, to narrow, and with the VIX down underneath that 16-ish area, 16-15 area, I think that we can have a nice rally into the first, second quarter of next year. Until that happens, you're at the risk of always buying the top and having the market, you know, in your face for 30 or 50 points and more of this sideways chop. So I do like the market bigger picture, but we need to take care of that kind of business here in the States. And I want to see the markets overseas that I had mentioned. China, Japan and Europe are all positively correlated to the S&P 500, all those indexes that I had mentioned earlier. Those indexes ultimately have to start doing better. In other words, if we're going to go higher, we need to start to pull those up along with us because of those correlations. Those correlations have been in place for 20 years. They're not going to go away. You know, they may go away for a month. You know, they're not going to go away for a year. So at some point in time, if we're going to go higher, we need to drag the rest of the world up with us, because right now we're basically the best, you know, the cleanest shirt in a dirty laundry, you know, however you want to say that. I think over the past month, the only global index that has outperformed us to any degree has been Belgium. And I mean, it's an obscure index that not a lot of people trade. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm cautiously optimistic, but I need to see the spreads come in and for us to get up above 5133 first.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, we're the best whorehouse in Texas right now. I guess that's what we got left here. But so when you look now, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's been bothering me in going on. And of course, one of the biggest concerns I have is the major manipulation from all the central banks taking away true market price discovery. Do you have any opinion on that?
I totally agree with you. I think, I'm not of the mind where you can always let, you know, the market solve everything. I think there are times that a little bit of intervention can stave off or help to avoid something really bad happening, like a 2008 kind of a situation. The other side of that coin, though, is the more you artificially push these markets around, the more you artificially change interest rates to a place that they're not going to go to by themselves, I think there's a price to pay for that. And the price to pay, I think, is going to be in some kind of sustained move downward in the markets. Having a bear market, having a large correction, a 15% pullback off of the highs, it's not a bad thing. It's a healthy thing. It allows the market breathe. It scares out the longs. It kind of brings in some fresh blood. And from doing this for 30-some years, there's a yin and a yang to these markets. And if you start to tinker with it too much, I think eventually, you know, the rubber band breaks. And that's the fear that I have, is Europe and China and Japan look like they're rolling over to the downside. And we are coming out of this QE situation we've had for many years. And in the meantime, you have more stimulus coming out of Europe. So it just seems to be like a food fight. There's so much stuff going on right now, counter to each other. What I'm afraid of is that eventually, you know, at some point, the music stops and we're going to have a bear market. I don't see that in the near future. I know enough by doing this for a long time that, you know, the market generally goes up. So to always play for the bear market is a sure way to lose all your money. So I'm always looking for good stuff to happen. I mean, I'm trying to find a reason to be long. But getting back to your point, I think you can't do this kind of stimulation, this kind of heavy handedness for this long and not have some repercussions down the road.
We are with John Kosar from Asbury Research. He's giving it to you straight. And John, when we come back from the break, what I want to know from you is in bear markets, they do actually create more opportunity, in my opinion. I want you to comment on that when you come back, because I think that we get concerned, and you said something very importantly here, is that the markets do go up. They don't go up every year, but on average, since the history, they go up about 8-9% year over year. And so it is always right to find a place to be long, but you should also learn to be hedged. But what we want to find out from you is what you think about those facts and more. We're going to come back after the break with John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com. Check it out. Great research, a guy, another one who's got experience. Now, he's not a guy that, like some of the others that you've heard on TV, that has no experience. This guy is from the floor, understands it, does it, and has done it, and has done it very successfully for 11 years. Check out AsburyResearch.com. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And if you miss an episode, you want to get it at libertytalk.fm. Go to bubbatrain.com, check out our hedging program and some of the other things we're doing. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop an hour for a break and be right back with John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com. We'll be right back.
In other words...
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with... John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com, as seen on CNBC, as seen at MarketWatch, as seen pretty much anywhere when they're looking for a technical analysis. John's the guy they call. So, John, we look around, we see what's going on in the markets, and we were talking off break about some of the things that you're seeing. Take us through what you're seeing throughout the worldwide markets. I know you work like I do 7 days a week because you're always in it. So take us through those pictures.
Yeah, basically what we were talking about was, again, I've been doing this a while, and I look at a lot of data. I'm looking at asset flow data. I'm looking at a lot of overseas markets, interest rates, equities. I'm looking at a lot of the commodity markets that have something to do with the economy, stuff like crude oil, copper, to a lesser degree now, probably gold and silver. And I have never seen such a diverse... Let's call it an opinion in all these various metrics, investor sentiment. And I think what's going on here is the global markets are telling you that they're not sure how the U.S. is going to come out of this long period of quantitative easing. It tells me that I'm not the only one looking at a lot of these charts and scratching my head. There's a lot of, you have... Japan, China, and Europe are all starting to roll over lower. You look at our markets, especially technology, and we look like we're set to start a new bull market. It looks like, we're building a base here, for a new bull market. I'm looking at sentiment studies that I've been looking at for years. One survey, the Market Vane survey, it indicates that we're on the brink of making a 1 to 2 quarter top. And then you look at another survey, which is a little bit more of a near-term survey. It's called Daily Sentiment Index, another one that I track. And that looks like we're near some kind of a bottom in the S&P. So, you could look at this and take it two ways. You can either say none of this stuff really works anymore, it doesn't matter. I've been doing this too long to know that that's not true. Whenever you get this kind of a situation, it tells you that you're at some kind of an inflection point. And I can actually see the inflection point in retail. If anybody out there follows XRT, that's the retail sector ETF. It's sitting on a 3 or 4 year trend line. If it breaks it, we're going to have problems here. I mean, obviously, yeah, the retail situation is really big now because we're around the holidays, but XRT is correlated to the S&P 500. HGX, there's another ETF that I think a lot of people follow, sitting on a multi-year underlying support line. That's housing. If housing breaks down, we had a bad housing number this morning. That's another problem. XOM, Exxon Mobil, sitting on a like, 5-year trend line. If that rolls over, then we have more problems with oil. Oil and XOM are generally correlated to each other, not all the time, but they are. So that's another place. Oil, everyone's looking at oil. Every time oil rallies a half a buck, you know, the S&P gets really happy. Sitting on a major, major trend line. Norfolk Southern, NSC, correlated to the Dow Transports, sitting on a 5-year trend line. So you have all these major parts of the economy. You've got transportation, housing, and retail. All of these things are sitting on these areas, oil, that we either start a rally from here or we could potentially go into that 10% to 20% move down overall in all the markets. S&P 500, I guess, would be the one you would really measure that by. So I think, you know, the word of the day is inflection. And depending if you're a trader, you know, there may be some opportunities here to buy for the near term. But if you're more of an investor, have a plan. Have a plan. If oil continues to fall, I think oil could go down to $30. That's the, if my memory serves, I believe that's the low that we made in 2008. Oil fails here, housing fails here, and retail fails here. We have a problem, and there's going to be a lot of people trapped up at the top in this tight range that we've been trading at for the past couple of months.
So, John, we look around. Now, I'm from the school. Okay. Now, again, I am bearish here just in general because of I've seen this movie before and I know how it ends typically. Okay. But again, I don't want to get away from the footprint because I know that's what you're working on. But we do know that certainly bull markets do end at some point in time and that markets always have a correction at some point. Is that a correct or an incorrect statement in your mind?
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is. There's we talked about this a little bit in the last segment, that there's the markets at the end of the day are driven by DNA of people. There's a fear and a greed component in these markets that ultimately take in whatever's going on in the world, the geopolitics or the new jobs number or what Obama said or whatever, any of this stuff, and there's a fear and a greed thing. And it's a constant fight between those two things. So to me, the artificial stimulus, a lot of the stuff that's been going on to artificially move these markets or try to push the dollar here, try to push the yuan there, try to push rates here, overseas has issues with their own interest rate. All of this stuff just doesn't go away. And the longer you go without a bear market, the more likely you are to have one, I think. Again, you know, this is anecdotal. I don't think you could put a statistical number on this. But anecdotally, it's kind of like a rubber band, you know, just to kind of use a simple metaphor. If you're holding a rubber band between your fingers and the farther you stretch it, you know, eventually it's going to break or you're going to let it go. And the farther it is, you know, the more it's going to hurt as it snaps back. And that's what I'm afraid of here, all of the artificial stimulus for so long, you know, the divergence between what's happening in Europe, China, and Japan that I had touched on, and what's going on here. That has to resolve itself somehow. It's not going to happen where the S&P is going to rally by another 10%, and those three countries are going to break by 10%. It's not going to happen. The correlations are too strong, too stable, and they've gone back for too far. So that's what worries me, and I think you're absolutely correct. Preservation right now to me, if I was talking to my grandfather, if I was talking to my friends, what I would be telling them is what's your downside here? You know, there may be a little more to make on the upside. We don't know, and markets generally do go up, but you've got to cover your butt on the downside. A lot of people in 08, they lost everything. People worked all their lives, had all their money in the markets, and were so cocksure that, you know, prices were going to continue to go up. Oh, buy the stock market. It's up 20% every year. You know, there's a put by the Fed, all this stuff gets in the papers, and people think they're bulletproof. I mean, look at the last 5 years. Every time the market breaks 5 or 6%, everyone comes piling in. It's just, yeah, well, the market can't go down because the Fed won't let it. At some point, that's going to break, and I think within the next few years, we could potentially have a nasty bear that has the same effect on people's wealth as 08 did, because they're going to think it can't happen again, and it will.
Well, isn't that always funny that everybody has the views that this time is different?
Those are the four most dangerous words in investing. This time it's different. I'm a firm believer of that. Again, you know, there's a balance to this stuff. Ultimately, fundamentals are going to push asset prices from A to B or from B back to A. But what really makes that move is that fear and greed. I mean, 08 was total terror, and it ruined a lot of people's retirements. You know, where they lost 25 years of savings over the course of a few months. And again, you know, just, you know, not to get too sidetracked, but this is where technical analysis has power. Just a simple moving average, a simple long-term moving average over the S&P 500 could have saved a lot of people a lot of the losses they had to go through in 08. You know, fundamentals, you tell you what should happen. Technical analysis tells you what is happening. And if you build a skeleton around those prices, as I like to call it, you know, buy as simple as a trend line, as simple as a common moving average everybody watches, it can help you to retain your wealth if bad stuff happens.
And that's things that you have to, that those are the things in life that we worry about, because we know that markets run in cycles like anything else. I mean, again, John Maynard Keynes said in 1927, we'll never have any market crashes again. And of course, we know that that's not correct. So, I mean, that's the research kind of work you get from John Kosar at AsburyResearch.com. And these are the things that, you know, we cover here all the time on the Bubba Show, is things to be prepared for, because you can easily prepare. And I think one of the most important things you said, John, was the fundamentals eventually will play out, but they don't play out because the first move that really dictates is always the technicals. But we're going to step out here for a break and get more from John Kosar, AsburyResearch.com. You can hear what he knows. It's, again, this goes back to that I always love that guys that came from the trading environment and the floor, and this is a guy who gets it and understands it. John Kosar, AsburyResearch.com. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break, but if you ever miss a show, go to libertytalk.fm and you can get it on demand. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, and we'll be right back with more from John Kosar. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with John Kosar from AsburyResearch.com, a frequent CNBC contributor. Catch him all the time. He's a straight-up analysis, technical stuff. He knows what he's doing. He covers exactly what we talk about here on a daily basis here on the Bubba Show. So, John, I am concerned about a lot of things. I'm concerned about the economy in general. I'm concerned that the Fed is incompetent and has not done a good job. I don't know what your feelings of the Fed are, but you can certainly lay them out after I give you this question. But also, I'm concerned about the commodities complex, because we're now on about 18-year lows here, and there doesn't seem to be any reason that we should expect them to go higher. Give me your thoughts, please.
Well, that's part of the bigger picture, and I think that's part of why you're seeing a lot of weakness overseas. When you get prices of goods that go down for a long, first of all, you know, let's back up one step. I've been following the CRB index for 30 years. Generally speaking, broad trends come out of these commodity prices in general. If you look at the individual components, there's exceptions, but you know, generally speaking, big cycles up, big cycles down for commodity space. The fact that it's been down so hard for so long and at extreme levels, if you look at the CRB or some of the other indexes that kind of represent these markets in general, it speaks, you know, to global deflation. There's a lack of demand for copper and these other goods. That's a problem, and there's no correlation with the stock market statistically, but economically, you don't want to see these prices under this kind of pressure for this long, because it tells you that there's problems with, you know, global growth. Possible threats of some kind of global deflation situation. So I think it's problematic. I think it's another reason to really, you know, don't get too excited when the S&P is up 30 one day and up 30 the next day, because I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, intraday with some of the high frequency trading that kind of pushes these markets up and down, you know, very volatile on a day-to-day basis. But then if you go back and look at a chart over 2 months, we're exactly where we were in October. That's the situation we're in right now. There was one other thing that I wanted to talk about tangential to what we were talking about, but it's a little bit different. I'm actually pulling up a chart on my screen now, because I did want to mention this.
If you're going to be like Bliss, and I'm going to need a dictionary when I talk to you, then I can't talk. No, just kidding.
All right. Here's what I'm looking at. The stock market tends to be like a dog chasing a frisbee oftentimes, point to point. Okay, jobs number, boom, let's go higher. Okay, PPI came out, boom, let's go lower. It's very point to point to point, where if you look at the bond market, the trends are less bumpy. Like if you're looking at the 2/10 curve, or if you're looking at the yield of the 10-year, the trends are less bumpy. They tend to go further, and I think it's because, you know, the bond market tends to look out 1 to 2 quarters, and the stock market more and more now after 2008 has become a short-term vehicle for a lot of people, you know, try to catch the swings. So they're two different vehicles. They kind of look at the markets different ways. The 2/10 curve, it has been narrowing since July 10th, and right now it's at 121 basis points. I don't know if anybody out there actually follows the levels, but 121 basis points is really important, because that's the narrowest, that's the flattest that the yield curve has been since February 2nd, first of all, of this year, and then you got to go all the way back to July of 2012, and it was at that 121 area. Let's call it 120, just to make it an even number. If the curve keeps flattening and gets through 120 and it stays there for more than a couple of days, that's the bond market telling you it sees economic problems ahead for the first quarter. And that's another reason to watch your charts, to watch your levels, and make sure you don't not pay attention to the markets for a week and come back and see that the S&P is 80 lower. It's another warning signal. Again, it's like all those markets that I rattled off before, housing and retail and crude oil and transportation. If we can hold in here, things look okay for a first quarter move higher in the stock market overall. If we can't hold these levels in 120 in the 2/10 curve, if we can't start to steepen from there, the bond market's telling you that it's as nervous as it's been in a few years, and that will eventually have some repercussions for the stock market. So I don't want to be a gloom and doom guy, but I think defense right now is much more important than offense.
Correct. And I'm never a doom and gloom guy. I just kind of try to speak the facts. And I believe that a correction is, I think the risk now is to being long versus being short. If you're that type of trader, if you're just a long trader, I think the risk is to being long, because I do believe that, you know, whether it be the first quarter or after, there's going to be some sort of correction, because, again, just mathematically over the history of the market, we get to a certain point and the sellers have to come in. We are a little bit carried away with the numbers, although they don't look that way because the PEs are a little distorted based on low interest rates. But we haven't had any real growth. We haven't had anything really to get excited about in this country. So, you know, I guess where would you look to get short, or what would be your indication to get out?
pulling up a chart here because I want to give levels. So, are we all right? Let's talk time frame. Give me a time frame.
I mean, let's say in between now and the first quarter.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to keep this tight. I'm going to keep this really tight because I think the numbers are such where you can. I'm looking at 1990 in the S&P 500. Again, it's very tight. It's very tight. So that's why I asked your time frame. If it was 6 months, I'd give you a different number. But between now and the early part of the first quarter, we're talking Santa Claus rally. We're talking if there's going to be any follow-through on the upside in early part of January. Below 1990 in the S&P, I would be protected, whether that is selling a future, buying a put, allocating some assets elsewhere, but that's your problem. If we can't get back up above the 200-day moving average in the S&P right now, and right now that average is just ballparking it here, it's like 2062. So let's call it 2060. If we can't get and stay up above 2060 over the next couple of weeks and we break down through 1990, I want to have protection on the downside.
And that's what I believe, and I believe that we offer a hedging program, and we can actually lock in portfolios basically right where they are, and that's something that's at my website bubbatrading.com, and you can see how we do it. We've developed a very, very nice system, but again, I know you agree that at worst case you should always have some protection or be in cash in times of trouble. And if we break below 1990, that would be your first warning sign. Would that be correct, sir?
That would be right, because just kind of based on everything else that I'm talking about, I mentioned those four markets again. I don't want to beat them up too much, but I think it's telling you something when you have four major areas of the economy, housing, oil, retail, and transportation all sitting on multi-year uptrend lines. If those lines break, those are four pieces of the economy. To me, if we break 1990 in the S&P, some of those levels are going to be broken in those individual ETFs and stocks that I had mentioned earlier in the show. So keep your stops tight and watch those major areas, transportation, oil, retail, and what was the other one that I mentioned? Housing. If those continue to be soft here, I think we can have a lousy, at least first part of the first quarter. And keep in mind seasonality here. December is the seasonally strongest month of the S&P based on our data, which goes back to 57. We go to 57 because that's when the S&P evolved into its current iteration from something that was called the S&P Composite Index that originated back in 1917-ish. So we go back to 57. December's the strongest month. January's the fifth strongest month, and February is the third weakest month. So we typically have kind of a slide after Santa Claus goes back to the North Pole.
Santa Claus,
a little slide there.
We got to go to North Pole now. John Kosar, thank you so much. AsburyResearch.com. It's been great to have you on. I hope you'll come back again. I wish we had more time, but this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thank you, everybody. See you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.